This is Church and State with Stephen Cox.
Well, 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 we meet yet again. Welcome back to Church and State, everybody. I am your host, Stephen Cox. You're listening to Magnificat Radio, where we are living our traditional Catholic faith. Thank you for tuning in. We have a fantastic show for you guys today. We have on Brian McCall, Dr. Brian McCall, from Oklahoma University's Law School. We're going to be talking to him for about a half hour. So the entire second half of our show today will be mostly dedicated to our topic, religious liberty and church-state relations. But the other big news this week was that Bishop Fillet, the Superior General of the Society of St. Pius X, met with Pope Francis for about a 40-minute interview, according to the Rory Chaley blog, who's been kind of hinting all week, if you've been following them on Twitter, that some big grand news is in store for traditionalists. And, well, everyone's kind of suspecting that that meeting will eventually lead to the recognition, so to speak, or regularization, quote-unquote, of the society by Pope Francis. And we'll get into that a little bit later. Next, Donald Trump. We haven't talked about politics in a while. My gosh, it's been about 3 or 4 episodes now. It's almost been a month and a half. But the Trump train is definitely slowing down. He had a big loss in Wisconsin this week, and some remarks about abortion. Even Hillary Clinton got in on the abortion debate, calling unborn children actually unborn children instead of fetuses and a clump of cells. So that was kind of interesting. We'll talk about politics, I hope, to an extent today. And then a lot of other things going on, just so much to get to. But first, let's get to what's going on with the society. And, you know, the reasons, well, what's going on here? Why is the Pope possibly going to, quote-unquote, recognize the society? And there's been a couple of theories out there, and let's just kind of run through the main ones. Well, one is that the Pope, he truly is a genuine modernist, and he literally wants everyone in this so-called Year of Mercy to be welcomed into the church as he sees it, and that he literally is aloof to what the society stands for. That, well, we know he's read, or at least it's been reported, that he's read the biography of the Archbishop by Bishop Tissier twice. When he was in Argentina, he had, I guess, some sort of sympathies, and he helped the government there recognize the society as a Catholic organization. And literally, perhaps he, just simply wants, out of his obviously confused thinking, literally everyone to be part, again, as he sees it, of this conciliar church. And that he really doesn't know kind of what he's doing because, well, again, he speaks about Pelagians. He speaks about people who are hard-nosed. And as Bishop Fillet admitted at the, I think it was at the press conference in Washington, D.C., that, you know, the Pope seems to be condemning us when he's speaking. So why then does he want to extend this sort of olive branch? Why does he, you know, why is he doing this? And perhaps he just doesn't really even know what he's getting into. I mean, it's a possibility. But of course, on the other hand, we can't deny the fact that, well, one, the failures of the talks, so to speak, between the society and Pope Benedict, and then the fact that Cardinal Bergoglio was the runner-up of the 2000 conclave where they elected Pope Benedict, and then basically he was handpicked. You know, many people wanted Archbishop Cardinal Bergoglio to be the Pope at the next conclave. And so maybe some are saying out there that, hey, they brought in this guy to finish the job that Pope Benedict couldn't, and that they want him to kind of bring in the society. And that's what Michael Matt wrote about in his commentary on this. Michael Matt over at The Remnant, who's had some interesting thoughts on all this. And here's what he said. What's in this regularization for the Vatican? He says, the old adage seems to sum up things quite nicely. Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. Michael Matt goes on to say, many of us are apprehensive over the prospect of the largest traditional Catholic priestly society in the world somehow being co-opted by a Vatican steeped in moral and theological turmoil. And he goes on to say, again, what's in this for the Vatican? And he goes on to suggest, well, the society surely knows about this. They know the sort of thoughts that it's going to bring about. Is the Pope laying a trap? Is he trying to divide and conquer the society, making no demands at all? The Pope, Michael Matt is arguing here. It is interesting. And obviously, the conclusion Matt says here is, look, pray for the society and maybe sometimes be careful what you wish for, because, it is something that's going on in the blogosphere right now, and it all comes down to what are the Pope's motives. And we can, I think, judge based on past statements, based on, prophecy. We have to tie into all this, I think, what was said by our mother at, Our Lady of Fatima, Our Lady of Good Success, Our Lady of Akita. It's been 100 years since Fatima in 2017. And this is the same Pope that's going to so-called celebrate and commemorate the Protestant Revolution in 1 year. And within 12 months of that, he's going to regularize his most ardent organized opposition. It's mind-boggling, and we had to pray for our leadership that they do the right thing, and so let's keep that in mind these coming days and weeks. But hey, the other big thing I wanted to get to was obviously politics, and we haven't talked about politics in a while. How's Trump doing? What's going on with the race? It seems that the Trump momentum is slowly dying. He's had a rough past couple weeks here. He stuck his foot in his mouth a couple times on separate occasions, and polls are showing that. Cruz has successfully consolidated the Rubio folks. There's been suggestions that he should perhaps offer the vice presidential slot to John Kasich. Now, I think that's a very odd ticket. Cruz is this constitutional conservative, limited government, Mark Levin, Glenn Beck type of guy. And Kasich has been in politics since roughly the 80s. He's a moderate on social issues. He doesn't care about religious liberty that much. At a debate not long ago, he said, hey, bake him a cake. It's your obligation. It's your duty. If it comes down to your religious freedom and your conscience, he says, you got to bake those gay weddings a cake. It's a very interesting ticket. But folks, hey, they're supporting him. I wouldn't vote for him. But it seems that the logical conclusion here is, if you want to overtake Trump, perhaps that's the way you do it. You consolidate all his opposition, from the conservatives who support Cruz to the moderates who support Kasich. And I think once you do that, I would argue that Trump should preempt that. He should choose his vice presidential nominee right now. It adds a sort of presidentialness to his campaign. Because right now it's all about Trump. And if he's getting a lot of negative attitudes, negative polling, he needs to defray that somehow. He needs to inject something else into this campaign. And what we're seeing right now, he is not likely going to get the threshold for the delegates. Mathematically, with the states left, the number of delegates left, he won't even get there. Even if he performs well in the majority of states, because how the delegates are mixed up when it comes to proportional versus winner take all, he won't get there. And in an article I wrote for akacatholic.com a couple weeks ago, I argued, well, if he doesn't get there, he still has the right to it. He's basically the majority candidate. He's got the majority votes. If the momentum is slowing into the convention, I think the party has every right to say, hey, hold on a second. Let's now look at, who else might be out there. I don't think Paul Ryan's going to at all, in any way, be the nominee. Some people are saying the Speaker of the House right now is going to be chosen. No. That would basically throw the party into turmoil. It's got to be amongst the top three. And Reince Priebus, the chair of the Republican Party, has said it's going to be amongst the three. I think he has to stick with that. But, you know, so expect that going forward. You know, Trump's going to win New York in a couple weeks. He'll probably win California as well. These are states that are suited to him, suited for him. But generally speaking, you know, what we're seeing is, well, the Trump's campaign's inability to know when and where and how to say things. He doesn't know when to hold off. He doesn't really quite understand politics just yet. It's not a reason. Some are saying, well, he doesn't really. I think it was Ben Carson a couple weeks ago who said, Trump, you know, he's not a politician. He doesn't understand certain things. Well, clearly he doesn't. Clearly he doesn't. But what I'm saying is that we're seeing now a person who doesn't understand tactics and strategy when it gets down into the weeds of politics. If you say one wrong thing, it can make national news. His remarks on nuclear missiles or nuclear weapons overseas. Now look, don't get me wrong. I think he's great on NATO. Let's get out of NATO. Why are we defending these countries that aren't footing their own bill? I think he's great on saying, hey, let's bring back jobs to the middle class. Let's not be economically globalists, free traders across the entire world. It's hollowed out the middle class of this country. I think it's great that he wants to protect our borders. But we're not seeing, I think over at, Michael Brennan Doherty wrote this not long ago, over at theweek.com, that essentially says, even if Trump wins the nominee, the coalition he's building, or not really building because he doesn't have the skills to, and his team is so small and inexperienced with coalition building, that it's going to fade out essentially, and that the Republican Party after this election is going to go back to being socially moderate, open borders, global free trade, pro-NATO, pro-interventionists. And there's some strong theories to that. There's some truth to that, rather. Because, it does come down to, does the party and do the people really want this? Or are they just voting for Trump, the personality and the man? Or is this a really groundswell, as folks like Pat Buchanan seem to think, of the grassroots retaking the Republican Party and reorientating that to what it historically was. A sort of populist, limited government, American first party. I don't know at this point. I think it obviously depends on who gets a nominee, who gets a nomination. If it's Cruz and Kasich, well, Kasich, yeah, those guys are establishment enough to get co-opted by the establishment. Obviously, Cruz is a hardline conservative, but once he gets in there, he's unapologetically pro-Israel. He says he's not a war hawk, but it seems that he could easily be found in many situations in the Middle East where he injects the United States. And with John Kasich, who wants to go and invade literally every country in the world. I mean, there's no one more hawkish than John Kasich. But in any event, you know, we're seeing here again the party go through these growing pains. And the struggle now is for the delegates. Trump is not at all organized about how to go about winning these delegates at the convention. Cruz is. Cruz is getting a lot of advice because, well, everyone's supporting him. Romney, Jeb Bush, Lindsey Graham. All these folks who were completely opposed to him 6 months ago. Now their argument is, well, we need to rally behind him. And you're going to see that more. You're going to see a lot of folks supporting him, giving him advice at the convention. And it will be a contested convention. That is my prediction. We've got plenty of time before then. But, Trump is faltering. Cruz is on the rise. But there's not enough delegates for Trump to win, and he won't get there. And so we're going to see it. And I don't. I mean, the way Trump's been talking, he says I've been treated unfairly. Well, he may well run as a third party. I don't blame him for that. I don't blame him for that. The way in which the party elites have treated him to an extent, and what they've said, they said, no way, we're not going to support the nominee if it's him at all. Hey, he might have a case. And if that's the case, he's going to run, again, he'll run as a third party. But until we get to that point, you know, that's in the future. We'll wait till we get there. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. All right, so we'll take a quick break right after this. We'll have another quick segment before our interview with Dr. McCall. You're listening to Church and State on Magnificat Radio.
Thank you for listening to Magnificat Radio, living our traditional Catholic faith.
Welcome back to Church and State, everybody. You know, this was an interesting week in regards to so-called interreligious dialogue. The Vatican Radio reports that the World Methodist Council opened a new ecumenical office in Rome recently. And that they met these leaders from this World Baptist or Methodist, excuse me, council, from Methodist Council of Europe, Methodist Church in Britain, all these sorts of leaders, met with Pope Francis on Thursday this week. And Vatican Radio interviewed Gillian Kingston. Apparently she's the lay leader of the vice president of the World Methodist Council. And Gillian is from Ireland, and just listen to what she had to say.
I think ecumenical relations work on a number of levels, and as I see this, there is the ecumenical theological dialogue. The longest standing of these dialogues is our dialogue with the Roman Catholic Church. The ecumenical project must work at the level of church leadership and structures. And then thirdly, it must of course work among the people of God.
Notice the phrase, the people of God. The church is now using, the Catholic Church has now successfully spread this concept, this diabolical concept, to all quote-unquote Christians. Everyone's a person of God. I mean, the Pope, when he met with them, said, we celebrate the resurrection of our Lord, and we come together united in the faith that Jesus is Lord and that God raised him from the dead. This baptismal faith makes us truly brothers and sisters. The Pope said he was pleased with the Methodist ecumenical office being opened in Rome, and that it is a sign of our growing closeness to overcome all that stands in the way of our full communion. Well, what stands in the way of communion is that these folks reject that the Pope is the Pope, that he is the vicar of Christ. The Pope says, this world today is afflicted by so much evil. We, therefore, must join together, inspired by the light of Easter, and become signs of love. Well, I forget who said it, but it is natural for man to focus on what they have in common. Man is a rational animal who desires peace and pleasantness and no suffering in this world. The flesh very much desires that. And this sort of rationalism, this sort of reasoned-based thinking, has seeped its way into the church since Vatican II. With ecumenism. Instead of saying, you know, what stands in the way of our full communion is that you accept the Pope, you accept the sacraments, you accept and submit to the faith and doctrine of all time, and that you come into the church and believe that the Eucharist is the body and blood of Christ, soul and divinity of Christ, and that he was serious when he said, he who listens to my followers, specifically the apostles, listens to me. These people, this woman, Jillian, is utterly confused. And ecumenism keeps her in her confused state. If you believe something that is false, let's say you believe that 2 + 2 = 5, you're living in a dream world, you're living in a fantasy, you're living in a fiction. You're living something made up in your mind. The same thing goes for religion. If you're not adhering to the truth, the one true Catholic faith established by Christ, divinely protected by the Holy Spirit, doctrinally, you're living in a fantasy world. You're living and following the beliefs of the person who founded Methodism, the person who founded being a Baptist, the persons who founded being Quakers. You're following those men. You're not following Christ objectively. They are encircling these enemies of Christ and his one true religion, the Vatican. There's Jewish synagogues in Rome. There's these ecumenical Methodist organizations. Just the other, I think it was a year ago, Martin Luther Square was named in Rome. And the Vatican said nothing about it. They said, oh, it's no big deal. Because, of course, the Pope's going to go and celebrate Martin Luther and what he did. Again, Pope John Paul II said Martin Luther was a profoundly religious man. This is not the mission that Christ entrusted us to. He said to convert those who are of the world and to bring them to truth and to teach them everything I've taught them. How is this so-called dialogue, which is an end of missionary activity, an end of bringing others to the truth, how is this in any way following what Christ has said? It's not. It's absolutely not. Hey, have you heard about this? The Masters golf tournament is going on down in Georgia. I don't know if you golf or not. I do. Well, I try to. I enjoy golf once in a while. Past years, I've not had the chance to do it as much as I did in years before. But, you know, all this, the sports, and we haven't talked about this, but we'll dedicate a show to this more so in the future. You know, summertime's coming. We're seeing all these commercials. If you have a television or just even on billboards or anything, stay away from television, by the way. Let's watch as little as that as we should, as we can, as possible. Everything's about fitness these days. I mean, they grow these young people from the age of 5, 6, 7, 8, all the way up to high school with the sole goal of being a professional. And they have these commercials that I was just watching one on the Masters. I was watching the golf tournament. And they had shown somebody waking up like at 4 in the morning. They get up, go for a run. They go back to their house, work out even more, then go get breakfast, then go to the gym and run some more. I mean, Fulton Sheen said, the world is in crisis when men take care of their bodies more than when they take care of their souls. And what do we see all around us? Everything is fitness. Getting in shape, going to the gym, being a professional athlete, being the best athlete you are and can be. It's all about the body. It's all about the physicality. It's all about the here and now. I mean, imagine priests are the spiritual equivalent of what professional athletes are. Yet we don't say anything about them. Interestingly enough, Catholics don't even say anything about them. I was watching, last fall, Notre Dame football. And Notre Dame always has like some sort of student profile or some highlight of their students, what good they're doing in the world. You know, they'll have like a segment on a senior who is doing like water purification in Africa. Or they'll have on a grad student who's working on cancer research and stuff. Why not profile one of your seminarians? Why not profile one of the priests who saves souls, whose duty is to purify and make whole again the soul and the spiritual? That is who we should be profiling, lifting up in society. Not these fallible, many times unsober celebrities who commit adultery and are and unfaithful to their spouses and whose money they live with lavish lifestyles. Look, I get professional sports. People have talents. People have skills. You can go to college for free if you're good enough. Hey, I played sports in high school. I was football, baseball, swimming. I get it. But modern sports, the modern athlete, modern celebrities, the modern fitness lifestyle, everybody belongs to a gym in their 20s. Everybody has a dog when they're 28, 29, and 30, when they're recently married. Newly married couples have pets. they put off having families. And when they do have families, they have maybe one or two children at the most. Everything is focused on pleasure and being in shape and the finest wines and the finest foods and the finest clothing. All this individualism. Dare to be great. Well, dare to be holy. Don't dare to speak out or be brave and however the world sees that. No. Dare to submit yourself to your spiritual director. Dare to humble yourself to those who may know more. Don't go after every little thing because you're intellectually curious. Curiosity can be a sin. And it is a sin for too many people. How many intellectuals who have blogs or have columns and have podcasts, you know, think so highly of themselves? Knowledge puffeth up. This world is run by very proud men. And it's all the work of human hands and human thinking. We need to be very, very careful about latching ourselves on to the way in which this modern society is going. Obviously, we need to call out corruption. Obviously, we need to keep an eye on them. The Catechism in one hand, the New York Times in the other. Hey, let's do it. I'm right there. This show is about that. But don't overemphasize your body. Because what are you? You're dust. You're dirt. You're food for worms. And on that topic, have you heard about this? David Dalyden. You may remember him. Several months ago, he was undercover at Planned Parenthood facilities in Texas. In order to gain entry to them, he had to have a fake ID. He had to go undercover with incognito. And he taped Planned Parenthood facilities, basically haggling over the price of body parts of aborted children. And the evidence was very, very straightforward. Pro-abortionists said, oh, these were doctored tapes and they were edited, heavily edited. Well, the grand jury in Houston, instead of charging Planned Parenthood for doing something illegal, which selling dead baby parts is illegal, they charged David Dalyden with the crime of tampering with documents that now he may face up to 20 years in prison. And moreover, in California, where Dalyden resides, the Attorney General Office of the state just recently, just this past week, went in and raided his house and took all of the evidence that he had, even unreleased documents, even unreleased tapes of other encounters he had with Planned Parenthood officials. And of course, we've come to learn that the Attorney General in this state has been supported in the past with thousands of dollars from Planned Parenthood. This man is a modern-day hero. He's uncovering and doing literally the Lord's work, standing up for children who are being slaughtered by persons who are, well, quite literally, doing the devil's work. They're making human sacrifice to the god of liberalism, to the god of autonomy, to the god of false gods of choice. Women who think, my body, my choice. No. God's creation, his will. And we're seeing the corruptness in our politics more and more. Thousands of dollars in multiple companies, millions of dollars, in fact, are being poured into North Carolina right now and other states that are opposing transgenderism and saying, no, gender is something that is not constructed. It is based on our chromosomes, it is based on our nature, it is based on our natural orientation, it is based on our bone structure, it is based on our muscle mass, all these sorts of things. It's something that nature endows. It's not something that we get to decide. God created us as we are, and that's that. Instead, we have billions of dollars being poured into states to pressure groups, to pressure lawmakers, to go along with their gender ideology, their totalitarian ideology. This is how the left operates. And it's because, again, in truth there is charity. In error there is no charity, and they don't know how to act towards those they disagree with. It's the direction this country is going. And it's a direction lest we have our priests and bishops return to spreading the one true Catholic faith, we'll never recover. This country cannot survive without truth. Without truth, you're living in error. Christ said, He is the way, the truth, the life. I am the Prince of Peace. You can do nothing without me. Well, what more evidence do we need? Let's return to that. And let's all play our part. In whatever state in life we're doing, whatever state in life we're in. We'll be right back after this quick break on Church and State. We'll be right back with Dr. Brian McCall talking about church-state relations and religious liberty.